who's a human rights activist living in London, but she's actually from Eritrea, and he's going to talk to us about the troubled relationship of state and religion in Eritrea.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm really delighted to be here, Kathy, because the invitation wasn't actually for me. It was for my colleague, Dr. Daniel McConan, who's a renowned human rights activist in the Eritrean arena. Unfortunately for you guys, unfortunately for me, he is unable to join you this year because he's in between posts, moving from Kassel in Germany to Belfast, I believe it is. So you've got me, and I hope I will do. This way so that people can see me. All right. The state of the troubled state of religion in Eritrea, that's the title of the paper that Dr. McConan and I put together, and that's the basis of this discussion. It's a much wider paper, but I'll focus on the bits that kind of underline the issues that I'll be touching on. Eritrean history, as with many African countries, is divided into episodes of pre- and post-colonialism, pre- and post-this war, pre- and post-the other war. And every time we Eritreans think, oh gosh, it was better when it was worse, so this is going to be a bit of... that's the background to what I'm going to be talking about. Before I go into the details of the status of the relationship between state and religion in Eritrea, I would like to say a bit about why we think it's important to discuss these matters, particularly in the situation of post-conflict countries that then descend into tyrannical regimes. In the Eritrean context, religion, as I've heard with many African countries, religion forms a very important pillar of state culture, the culture of the people, and the identity of the people. So it's very important to discuss religion in that context. It has the same importance as nationalism and the preoccupation of state building. However, for me personally, and for a lot of us activists and scholars involved in Eritrea, we have come to the realization of the fact that religion is in fact state religion relationship is in fact a good indicator of good governance in post conflict states where the government hasn't got a track record that we can monitor and gauge. Religion and the relationship between state and religion is a very important, crucial indicator of good governance. So it's within that context that it has become very important for us to track back the status of religion and state in Eritrea. Pre-independence Eritrea, unlike many African nations, Eritrea got its eventual independence not from a European colonizer, but from the neighboring African country of Ethiopia, where I was born. And so it is a very interesting situation, and it's worth looking at that, and those of you who are interested in that, because it's a very crucial dynamics that has got a lot of ongoing implications. But pre that, the pre-colonial history of Eritrea is that of hostilities, and not much can be said about other developments in terms of state building and what have you. other than dealing with conflicts and overcoming conflicts. But post-independence, in 1991, the war for independence from Ethiopia ended, and post-independence, we've got this brief period between 1991 and 1998, where we saw quite a lot of positive developments and a lot of anticipation on the back of that. President Isaias Afwerki had began to be known as one of Africa's Renaissance leaders. Eritrea's economy was doing well, comparatively, given the background of war that it was recovering from. So it was a very hopeful period. But unfortunately, that didn't last long, and within 8 years of independence, Eritrea and Ethiopia were back in conflict. And out of that conflict, we've now got a state that has been described by many, including Dr. Trisha Redep-Heppner, who's known to some of you here, as a militaristic garrison state where everybody is mobilized for war. We're on a war footing. And in fact, this picture describes Eritrea quite well, where everybody from the age of about 18 to endlessly 50-54 is actually drafted into the military service. It has got a starting point, but it hasn't got an ending point. So everybody, you see quite a lot of young people like that, mobilized for war. This war hasn't happened, but it's always rumored to happen. So out of that war emerged a very tyrannical, a very authoritarian, unaccountable, volatile and violent state and leadership that is so focused on maintaining state power that describes Eritrea quite well, I believe, unfortunately. But going back to the state-religion relationship, I would like to go back again to the pre-independence era and look at what Eritrea represented, or what the state-religion relationship represented in Eritrea. The backdrop to that is in that small space of small geographical space, there's a lot of diversity in Eritrea. Diversity in terms of ethnic groups, around at least nine recognized ethnic groups, and one or two others who would like to be recognized as a distinct ethnic group. So there's quite a lot of diversity ethnically, linguistically. And then there's a lot of diversity as well in terms of religious diversity, both within Christianity and Islam. Got a lot of denominations of Christianity, at least two, but the predominant one being Orthodox Christianity, but we've got Catholics and we've got Jehovah's Witnesses, various Protestant denominations, including Pentecostals. We've also got indigenous belief systems practiced by one or two tribes, but recognized and well respected as well. We've got the Sunnis in Islam, which are the majority. We've recently got the Wahhabists as well, and that is recognized, and we haven't seen any kind of animosity we're talking about so far. We've also got very minority belief systems like the Pais, and the even Judaism exists to a degree. And it's part and parcel of everyday life in Eritrea. The skyline in Asmara has got minarets and church buildings, and the people haven't had religious war at all in the history of Eritrea, despite the fact of this diversity. Christianity, due to the link between the Ethiopian Abyssinian Empire and the Orthodox Church relationship there with the state, Christianity, and particularly Orthodox Christianity, has been historically given the advantage of the closeness with state power, although it has never been a state religion in that sense. But in terms of influence, in terms of power, in terms of wealth, it can predominant faith, especially in the highlands of Eritrea, which is ethnically, culturally, and linguistically linked to Ethiopia. So you've got a very dominant church, which accounts for about 40 to 45% of the population, one church. And then you've got Catholicism, which during the Italian era enjoyed a period of influence because it was both facilitating in the coming of the Italians, but also in terms of setting up institutions that were social services institutions that have lasted to this day. So the Italian colonization period did offer the Catholic Church a sort of the kind of influence and dominance that the Orthodox Church has had throughout history. And then it's the same with Christianity. There is a growing, still growing, very much an important element to the diversity, to the image of diversity there, which is the Protestant churches, including the Evangelicals and the Pentecostals, that has been growing in momentum and in influence, although it has never enjoyed the kind of state power or the kind of influence associated with the state power. The influence here purely comes from the sheer number of people, particularly the sheer number of people from the educated middle classes joining these churches. In 1935, these churches had a brief period of being ostracized, but then they came back. Islam has, although it dominates in the lowlands, in the western lowlands bordering Sudan, it has never enjoyed the kind of state affiliation or closeness to the state, and this has been exploited politically in terms of when the Ethiopian state wanted to show the independence struggle as an Islamist movement. Moving on very quickly. Right. The by law in Eritrea, we've got two provisions that should protect the right to religious worship and also the right for non-interference from the state in religion. However, one of the provisions, which is the constitution, the Eritrean constitution, has never been implemented, therefore not even worth talking about at this stage, unfortunately. But despite those provisions and those clear wishes of the Eritrean public, the government continually interferes with religion, and particularly, as I say, with the evangelical churches and the Pentecostals, purely because of the kind of people that are attracted to these churches and the momentum with which it is growing, and the fact that it kind of is easy for the government to target these churches. However, these churches weren't the first ones to be persecuted, despite the fact that they were that you see the most devastating impacts there. The government started with Jehovah's Witnesses, who were targeted for their refusal to participate in the military services for military duties. They were denied a lot of rights, and this was back in 1994. In 1994, and then again in 2004, there have been gruesome persecution against Muslim scholars under the pretext of their relationship with armed. Political Islam in the West, which has never been justified or proven, but there has been persecution against Muslims as well. And then in August 2005, the government went and did the undoable, what no other colonial power has ever done, which is attack the Orthodox Church. And the Orthodox Church, the patriarch of the Orthodox Church, has been under arrest, house arrest since. We say house arrest because nobody can say where he is, but in the prison systems. But he has been incommunicado, imprisonment since. And that is that is the situation that we find ourselves in Eritrea, where there are thousands of, there are thousands of political prisoners, but there are thousands of prisoners of religious persecution, prisoners as a result of religious persecution, and it has gone right across the society because of the implications for every religious group, despite the fact that the government says it recognizes the Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church, and the Lutheran, the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and also Islam as a religion. But there are thousands of people in prison, all churches not belonging to the four groups that I have mentioned are closed, including the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the Baptist Church, and a lot of other major denominations have been shut, and their leaders and the pastors are in prison. And there's a catalogue of religious rights abuses that spans right across the society. I'll conclude here, and I'll go back to where I started by saying the reason why it is important to discuss the state-religion relationship for me and for all of us who have sadly come to learn this is it is an important indicator of what the state is going to be like and what it is capable of. And the situation in Eritrea is a classic retelling of that famous situation where it was said first they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, and I didn't do anything about it, and then gradually they came for me, and there was nobody to do anything. It is an indicator, the state-religion relationship is an indicator, a very good indicator, of what post-conflict states would turn out. It's a microcosm of what else is happening. So in Eritrea, you've got all this happening in religion, with religious groups, but we've got political prisoners, we've got journalists and business people, academics, intellectuals, all of them facing the same similar situation. So I guess that has earned Eritrea the unfortunate reputation as being the North Korea of Africa, and unfortunately it bears truth, and the state religious relationship has been a pretty good indicator